Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 158.
This week on the podcast, out of literally nowhere, the Democrats grow a pair and spurn Obama and the Republicans on the TPP.
A Hillary Clinton relaunch proves that she is physically capable of reading words that Bernie Sanders once said and meant.
And Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio apparently never finished high school English.
Michelle Bachmann brought about the straw poll end times with her 2012 win. Whatever will Ben Carson do now?
And every once in a while, America comes together around one story to collectively win the internet. This week, Rachel Dolezal was that story.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
This was the greatest news week in history.
I know.
Like, I just cut Brent off. He was going to say happy something.
I was going to say happy pride.
Oh, it's happy pride. Yeah.
Duh.
Obviously. I know. That's why we're both sunburned.
Yeah. Well, you were so excited to get into the news because this week was like
a dream.
It was such a dream. And we only have like four or five stories like on the, but they're all perfection.
Yeah. This is a week in which you will both have time to listen to other podcasts,
right,
and have experienced
if
perfection.
If we only had each of these stories to talk about,
It'd be enough. It's enough to have any of the wonderful stories that we have this week. Collectively, what we have is nothing short
gold.
Of a miracle.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
And we braved post-Pride sunburn.
Right. And speaking of Pride, before we get into actual news, it's important to note that there was a Pride spotting that we need to bring to you today.
Yeah.
Because we have it on firsthand account that a one disgraced congressperson, Aaron Schock, was at Pride this weekend.
Mr. Downton Abbey office himself.
Right. Potentially gay /
definitely
gay congressperson, Aaron Schock, was at working out at the gym this morning and then asked the people of the gym where he could get a smoothie. This was happening in West Hollywood. And then
on the day of Pride,
why else would he be here? For he's from Illinois.
Right.
And then wandered off
shirtless
down to Santa Monica Boulevard, which is where one goes to Pride.
That's where Pride is.
That's
where the parade is happening.
Under the guise of getting
a smoothie.
I'll tell you what he needed.
He pretended like he was shocked that it was Pride. As if that was news to him, person who would come all the way from Illinois to come work
to
out in West Hollywood and go to Pride.
Right.
So
Aaron Schock, Pride goer. You heard it here first.
Yeah, that's...
You heard it only here, probably.
I would imagine that no one else is reporting this news.
No.
And
we know.
We know things. We're
that's
knowers
right.
of things.
That's right.
Among the other Pride celebrity sightings we saw were a lot of congresspeople.
Right. Adam Schiff, our
Adam
own
Schiff,
congressperson.
Our own congressperson, as
that's
well
right.
as a couple other local congresspeople were there.
Mm-hmm.
Channing Tatum.
That's right.
A shirted Channing Tatum.
Ugh.
He was on a Magic Mike float. And
everybody was shirtless except for Channing Tatum.
There was an entire float
like,
of shirtless men,
off.
And then he was just randomly wearing a shirt.
I mean, what else are you there for?
That's like not helping anyone.
Ugh.
It's like when people don't know what they're doing in these floats, it's like really frustrating.
I mean, there
You're
were
not
the floats
in
are
the Easter parade.
Suspect.
All suspect.
By the way.
I mean, it's one of the most suspect parades
right.
in America.
And it just goes on for days.
Everyone in Los Angeles marches in it.
That's right.
Actually, and I've thought about that.
We were there over 2 hours, and it had no signs of ending.
I've been to the New York one for like 4 hours and gotten to the point where every church in New York City is marching. And I'm like, all of you guys? Like, every
that
one
can't
of
be
you?
Right.
Can't, this can't be right.
No.
You can't all, but everyone wants to be in a parade.
Yeah, it's
you know,
true.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's exciting. So in any case, Pride is among the exciting things that happened this week.
But it's secondary.
It's secondary
or tertiary, potentially.
Whatever the fourth one of those things would be. Whatever it is, what's most important that happened this week is the Democratic revolt on the TPP.
Who saw this coming?
Holy moly.
Not a one.
Not a single person who's been at all following Democratic politics for the last decade. I mean,
like, where did this come from?
It's the
it was like they got in the minority and then like grew a pair.
But like a year later,
I
you know, it took them a year.
And they've been in the minority in the House for a while now, I guess.
Right.
But
they've
like,
had time to figure this all out.
They have.
But so anyway, on Friday, something is amiss. Obama goes over to the House Democrats and decides to try to really sell them on the TPP.
Right. Because he knows that they've got vote problems.
They're having vote issues.
They needed 217. They didn't think they had it. So the president himself went over there. To what it sounds like, question everyone's,
It sounded like he was not very polite.
No. And people spoke out like in public about how they didn't really take kindly to him coming over.
They basically said that he had been disrespectful.
He like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which I guess he had been, because also the Democrats were pulling what I think is a hilarious shenanigan, where they were not. This was about giving fast track authority to the president for TPP. Right. It wasn't about TPP itself. Right. It was about this fast track bill.
Right.
In order to pass fast track, they first have to pass the TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act.
Which is a bill that they invented.
A Democratic bill.
Correct.
That was supposed to give displaced workers assistance after the TPP stole their jobs.
Right, exactly. This is the thing that has been attached to other trade agreements in the past.
So in order...
So this is the thing that has been a law for a while that the Democrats have, you know, is a baby of theirs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in order for them to get to the fast track vote on TPP, they have to pass TAA.
Right, exactly. And what was going to happen was that if the TAA passed, they knew the TPP would pass because most of the Republicans were going to pass the TPP.
But you know what the Republicans don't want? Is to give aid to workers who've been displaced.
Right, they don't care about
that. So the Republicans, they were having trouble getting the votes for TAA, and so they were expecting Democrats to step in and fill in the void.
Right, so what Obama needed was Democrats to pass the TAA and the Republicans to pass the TPP.
Right.
But the Democrats knew that if they voted on the TAA, that the TPP would pass, and that's what they didn't want.
So they were like, we're not having it.
They had to sort of like shun their own bill that they had invented themselves.
Well, and they got a lot of flack for this, and I saw a lot of like very prominent House Democrats being like, I don't see what's so wrong with this strategy. If you know that as a result of your action, something bad is going to happen, then why is it bad to take, you know, to reverse those actions? Like, why? Like, I think Charlie Rangel had a sort of powerful quote for him, at least, about this, where he was basically like, I don't see why if the action that I take directly results in these consequences, I don't choose to not take that action. Like, that is the choice that we were given. Because
it was voting against the TAA was the only way to ensure that the TPP fast track was going to be killed.
Exactly. Pelosi came out of the woodwork with some very strong words about it after the president failed to convince anyone to vote on it on
the House floor.
And she said, if TAA slows down the fast track, I am prepared to vote against TAA. So she came down and basically was like, if this is going to slow this whole process down, then I'll do it
for it. Right.
And progressive Democrats had been having a conniption fit for a while, but they were finally sort of like seeing their efforts come to light.
It's just so interesting, like, because you would have thought there were enough Obama lackeys in the House.
I know.
To sort of push this over the top.
I know.
But not surprisingly.
This is not popular with their base. Like, why? Like, especially in the fast track version of it. Where you can't give amendments and you can't sort of adjust the bill to make sense people. Instead, it's just sort of like handing carte blanche to what is a very conservative concept.
Well, and that's what...
You know, like, it doesn't make sense for them to do this.
No, and that's what so many people have been saying. I mean, I think, there supposedly is going to be another pass at this on Tuesday, although I don't know whether it's going to pass on then either.
No.
But, I mean, had Obama gone about this in a different way, then I think he probably would be able to get this passed, but I think he's just concerned about getting it passed.
I don't think it's the actual agreement that's the problem here. There are enough Democrats.
There are enough pro-trade Democrats to pass this.
I like that you went pro-trade. I went
assholes.
Asshole.
I know. yes.
But, I mean, there are enough asshole and pro-trade Democrats to pass this bill.
Right.
This is just about fast track.
Yeah.
And that is why, like, this is so crazy to have made this kind of, like, terrible strategic mistake.
Yes.
When you have a bill that you can easily get passed and it can still be your legacy bill and it can still do X, Y, and Z and whatever. Like, to just sort of stumble over this, you know, nonsense procedural stuff is so hilarious.
I know. Yeah.
Kept telling them to play it straight. Like go fuck yourself.
I know, right?
Don't tell me that.
But I'm shocked.
That's why they all get so pissed.
I remain shocked that they did it, though.
I know. And it was, like, bold. It was happening as we were watching online. Like, the news was, like, evolving as we watched.
I know. And it wasn't even close. A ton of the Democrats voted against this. It was 300-something to 100-something. I don't remember exactly what it was. But, I mean, they needed 217. So they were off by a country mile.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
not
close.
This was something, they finally did something unified that was the right thing.
Right, I know.
We've been waiting so long for this to happen. I'm so proud of them.
I know, me too.
But so, they were all, like, panicking into the night, basically. The Republicans are panicking, because I don't think the Republicans thought this would happen.
I don't think they did either.
I don't think anyone saw this coming.
And in fact, so many, you know, they did things to ensure that this wouldn't happen, too, because one of the things that was at issue here was that the Democrats were at least initially upset about was in this TAA bill, there were some... There were some Medicare cuts, like $700 million or something like that. So that was sort of like their cover to initially oppose this. And at the last second, the Republicans added a bill, like a separate bill.
To offset that.
To offset that and to basically put that separate. So, I mean, they were literally doing everything they could to get the Democrats to vote for this and still couldn't. I mean, I agree with you. I think everyone was shocked.
I know. And proud.
And proud.
Shocked and proud. Yeah. Finally, some governance going on over there. Who would have guessed?
Yeah.
Also, some very loud Democratic activists threatening to primary people over this, which I think is part of why they suddenly started to panic.
Right.
Is like, this really became like a sort of linchpin issue for, Democracy for America's president had like this sort of epic
Jim Dean,
takedown. I'm just going to read it because,
do it. It's intense.
It's a great quote.
Yeah.
Ahead of today's votes, we wanted to be very clear to Democratic members of Congress. If you vote for either Medicare cutting, trade adjustment assistance legislation, or fast-track authority for the job-killing Trans-Pacific Partnership, we will not lift a finger or raise a penny to protect you when you're attacked in 2016, and we will encourage our progressive allies to join us in leaving you to rot. We will actively search for opportunities to primary you with a real Democrat.
Yikes.
They were not leaving you to rot.
Also, do you know who voted for this, by the way? Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Oh,
she's the head of the DNC.
I know.
For fuck's sake.
I know. Like,
she's an Obama lackey.
Right. Yeah. She's conservative-ish. I mean, she's not.
She is.
She's not unconservative.
No, she's
but
not.
I mean, this is a real call to arms, I think, because
this is threatening
to do Tea Party style.
It is.
Primarying of people, which I have been thinking we should be doing this whole time.
Me too. Right.
I mean, we could have gotten rid of that Bruce Braley situation right off the bat if we had primaried him with anyone.
Right.
Like, I mean,
any other living any Democrat other in the state of Iowa.
Human being or a pig potentially. I mean, there were so many options.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is what we really need to be doing to threaten these, you know, far right Democrats who are voting on bills like this that are not, this is not what Democratic voters want.
No, it's not.
Nobody likes these free trade agreements except business people.
Well, and it's not, but that's what I was going to say. It's not what American voters want either. I mean, I feel like this is, add this to the list of things that America lines up with progressives on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because this is obviously bad for workers. We know that these trade agreements are bad for workers. I mean, NAFTA has proven to be bad for workers. CAFTA has proven to be. I mean, like, progressives.
And we keep fucking passing them.
And we keep passing them. And progressives know this and have been voting against it and speaking out against it. And they have finally gotten the rest of the reasonable people in the party to sort of, you know, finally fall in line with them. And it's a victory. I don't know what else
Brent
to call it.
Some cheerleading.
I am. I'm throwing my hands in the air because.
Yeah, there's no more to say.
It's a victory.
It's a victory. But I mean, this is something that I feel like the party has yet to catch up with Democrats on, or had until very recently.
Right, exactly.
Failed to catch up with their actual constituents
on. Right, exactly.
Because why is this even being proposed
by Obama? I'm glad
he sees this as like a legacy-making legislation, and like, don't be the guy that did this.
No, I know. Well, and I'm glad that the rest of the, I mean, it was still progressives leading this, but obviously they got some sort of like more mainline Democrats. I mean, obviously, you know, Nancy Pelosi voted against the thing. I mean, you know, this is a thing where, like, you know, people have been talking about against sort of deals like NAFTA and CAFTA for a long time, and they have always been sort of like the, considered to be like the fringe loon bags. You know what I mean? Like, this is a thing that in past presidential elections, like, people like Dennis Kucinich has been denouncing, and everybody sort of, I think, rolls their eyes at sort of like, oh, well, that's crazy person. But, you know, it's nice to see that the non-crazy people are sort of with us now.
No,
you know,
like, they should have always been. It doesn't make any sense to not be with us. It's a fully... No.
The fringe has been right about this the whole time.
The fringe has been right about this the whole time because this is something that only benefits, like, corporate robber barons. Right. Like, it's not... It doesn't help anyone else.
Certainly not.
Certainly doesn't help American workers. It might be great for workers elsewhere. It's been a boon to a lot of other worker communities. But not America's.
Exactly. Cheap labor.
Cheap labor is having a ball with this. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But not American workers.
No.
They're not. Meanwhile, so on Saturday, yesterday, Obama rushes back to the Hill to try to kind of like save his trade agenda.
Yeah.
Gets nowhere again. I mean, basically, they're hoping to hold a vote next week, like we said, but we're not really sure what's going to happen at that vote because I think the Democrats have been pretty clear about their thoughts on this.
Yeah. I don't know what would happen. Like, are they just going to redo the whole the same thing is not going to get a different result on Tuesday.
I think that they're going to have to reconsider it
fast track. That's exactly what it is.
You know, they could get this passed easily without fast track. They just don't want to deal with the amendment process. But like, maybe you'll have to deal with the amendment process because it doesn't seem like passing this carte blanche and not doing anything, you know, not giving anyone an opportunity to, like, make adjustments to it is not the strategy that people were looking for.
It wasn't.
No.
It isn't.
And I think that Republicans will have to deal with some Democratic amendments to this process anyway, because they want it passed.
Yeah.
And they don't have... It's already extreme enough for them. Like, they have nowhere to go with it.
Right.
The Democrats are the only people that have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
In any case, it was very exciting to see all of that happen.
It was.
Lost in all of that excitement was Hillary Clinton's campaign, like, relaunch big right. policy speech.
I watched it, so you
Brent
didn't have to.
Watched it, so that I didn't have to.
I went to go watch it yesterday because I knew it was happening, and I found it online. And then as I started watching it, I was like, oh my God, this is an hour.
Yeah. It's a real Bill-style
it was.
Speak-a-thon.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was like a State of the Union address.
Yeah.
Really.
It was sort of a pseudo State of the Union address. That's kind of how people described it online.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It was on Roosevelt Island in New York. And it was sort of, it didn't get, like, reviews in terms of being, like, exciting or in any way sort of, like, you know.
No.
Burnery. Like, it was sort of like a speech that she delivered.
At least personally, I thought that it was pretty good in the sense that, like, she probably said the right things.
Right.
Now, we'll get into what some of those are, and I will talk about how I don't believe most of what she said.
Right.
But she said the right things, and she said them in a way that, you know, I think her delivery is getting
better.
Better. I mean, it wasn't a total snore, and she's been known to put people to sleep when giving public addresses.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not, like, you know, the world's greatest orator, if you will.
She's not Bill.
She's not. No.
That's a problem that she has been facing for years.
Yeah.
But yeah, she, interestingly, and not surprisingly, I guess, but, like, has really been trying to capture this leftward momentum.
I mean.
Hardcore.
Big time. Yeah.
Like, no specifics, P.S., were included in these left-wing,
and,
you know.
No. And she did, she did say in her speech, and that she would be giving specific policy addresses
about
each topic sort of, like, coming up in the near future, like, on a weekly basis, basically. So, like, and you wouldn't necessarily expect her to go into great detail about these things. It was sort of a broad...
Yeah, it was a broad stroke.
...vision for the country sort of situation, but yes.
But her vision has gotten surprisingly left-leaning in the last few months.
The country's has.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
So...
That's true. I think specifically her bases has sort of openly become has moved to a point left that is unfamiliar to her.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like the left wing momentum of years past.
No.
Of the Clinton years.
Yeah.
This is like a new kind of leftward momentum that we're experiencing
right
now.
Well, and yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that she also sees, I think she sees the fact that it doesn't hurt her to go to the left, even, I don't think, in a general.
You
look at some of, you know, the main points that she talked about and some of the people on the left talk about, and when you look at sort of, like, polling around the country, I mean, people are siding more with the further left than they ever have, whether it's about the minimum wage, whether it's about sort of, you know, foreign policy issues, whether it's about any number of issues. They are siding with the far left more than they even are with the center, or certainly with the right, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I mean,
the right is losing points big time.
Yeah.
The left is gaining them. More people are willing to identify themselves as liberal than they have in years past.
Right.
I think now 26% of voters consider themselves liberal.
Right.
Which is a huge number for a far left, you know, kind of a far left kind of word like
that. Like, I know, right?
Like, that's not something that you used to call people a liberal to insult them.
That was a
them.
Nasty word, right? Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So, and interestingly, if you call them a liberal elsewhere, you are insulting them because you're basically calling them a Republican. It's like,
yeah,
so
it's
curious,
I know, right?
How this word became to mean what it does here. But in any case, she also kind of talked a little bit about opposing this sort of, like, quick buck, you know, easy return culture that's kind of taken hold in big business and in, like, banking and finance sectors, where instead of, you know, she talked about wanting to create an economy where businesses are rewarded for investing long term in their employees, and instead of, you know, just getting a quick return on stuff. And the left was sort of like, all right. Like, the left's response was sort of like, not very trusting, I don't think, because, I mean, people were sort of, like, acknowledging that she was saying the correct words, but as we know, her big fault as a candidate is her sort of economic conservatism, basically. Right.
If I was running for president and someone told me that the country was moving to the far right and then put papers in front of me, I could say the words that were on the papers.
Right. I would not necessarily believe or want to believe the words on the papers.
Right.
But we...
You could read
Hillary
them.
Clinton if can, your main can goal read was English.
Be to, that's right. If your main goal was to be the president, then you would...
Yeah, you could...
You would read them.
You could put some words on a paper and just deliver those
and
words.
Say them.
That's no problem.
Right.
She can read
Which
with the best of them.
Is my concern...
About what's happening here.
What
well, that's, it's
was.
Just... It's so hard... You know, she can talk about this all she wants, but it's so hard to find any of this in her record.
Right.
And her record is really what speaks to her, you know, policy
right
agenda. Like,
it, well, and there were even some, you know, suspect mentions of things that were either, you know, that aren't in her record, or she sort of misrepresented, not necessarily in a, you know, outward sort of way, but I mean, you know, I said to you, I was watching it and I texted you and I was like, oh, she just mentioned the 9/11 health bill.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Your immediate response was, oh, the one that she didn't lift a finger to help pass.
Well,
I was like,
she,
that's
like,
the one.
She,
you know,
she was, this is, I think, a problem with her record. She did a lot of work, actually, to help pass the 9/11 health bill. She
didn't
accomplish it.
She didn't. Right.
Kirsten Gillibrand came in there and, like, just fucking nagged everyone to death. And then they were like, fine, we'll pass this fucking bill.
Right,
like,
get off our case.
She came in there and, like, immediately it turned around. And it was because she was effective. There's something very effective about her. Like, she knows how to get stuff done.
Right.
Hillary Clinton is someone who has a lot of vague talking points in her, you know, in her kind of, like, in her record, but she hasn't delivered on a lot of them because she really hasn't been that effective of a politician, which is something that I talked about a lot when she was the senator from New York, is that, like, and part of it was just that there was so much pressure on her because she was so kind of, like, famous, and so there was a lot of, you know, you would score a lot of political points by blocking her stuff instead of other
right.
rando freshman senators' stuff, but at the same time, it made her a sort of toxic politician. It made her a toxic candidate because
right.
you knew that everyone would work extra hard to make sure she didn't accomplish anything,
right.
which they did.
Right.
And she worked extra hard to help them help her not accomplish anything.
Right, exactly.
So that's kind of the problem with her record.
Yeah.
Is her record is sort of disappointing. And
well, and I think the problem is that
also
we've
far
seen,
right.
we've had two terms of that. And that is not necessarily her fault. But I
no.
mean, you know, she's a divisive person.
She's a divisive person. Yeah. No, exactly.
And that's not going to change.
No. No, and she's divisive in ways, she's divisive in ways that aren't fair to her. She's divisive because she's
course.
A woman. She, in the same
yes.
way that Obama has been divisive because
he's black,
and that's not fair to him.
Correct.
She's also divisive in ways that are fair to her. Because
yes.
she is part of, like, the, like, ruling elite of the Democratic Party, has
yep.
been for years, and is very, very far to the right in a
yep.
party that is moving very far to the left.
Yeah.
So, that... Is she has earned that divisiveness.
Yeah.
You know, her ties to Wall Street have earned her some divisiveness. That's
yeah.
that's not, you know, this. So she's sort of like uber divisive.
Yeah.
She's extra divisive.
That's right.
She's a super human amount of divisive. In any case, she hasn't been really, like, moving away from Obama as much as I think everyone maybe expected her to.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, his approval rating goes up and down and whatever, but I feel like generally her, like, the Democratic base of voters feel
yeah.
like generally good enough about him that
right.
it's not worth trash talking him to get this
right.
nomination.
Well,
she wants to gain some of his grassroots momentum
right.
out of the deal.
And she
you
also
know?
Talked about some of the specific, I mean, she worked for him, obviously, but, you
right.
know, she also talked about how, you know, we've added more jobs in this recovery than sort of the average after a downturn. You know, it's happened faster this time
right.
than, and more jobs have happened. So she sort of, I think that, you know, she, while his approval ratings are not great, there are things from his last two terms that I think that she is certainly not, wouldn't mind running on. I mean,
no,
she's
exactly.
not going to, she's not going to mind running on the fact that we got a healthcare bill passed.
Right.
She's not going to mind running on the fact that he got us out of a war that she got us into.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that, you know, she can sort of hang her hat on that are things that he did that, you know...
Right, it doesn't make
sense...
It
doesn't hurt her to run away from.
To move away from his record
no.
and kind
well,
of
and
play
I,
the adversary the way that I think
yeah.
she'd probably like to.
Yeah, yeah.
But she also didn't really talk about being Secretary of State in the speech.
No.
That's
that
a forgotten chapter. Interestingly, because that was her most well-liked chapter
I know.
In life. Like, I know that
I know.
It brings up mentions of Benghazi, and then we have to deal with that whole nonsense.
Right.
But, like, Also, people really, her approval rating skyrocketed while she was Secretary of State because she was in a non-political, you know, capacity. So. Yeah,
she did mention that she was in the Situation Room when they got Osama bin Laden. That's something that she is going to want to highlight, I think, probably. Yeah.
Being in the
room.
She was there. She was present in the
room. There is a photograph of me in the room.
I am right there. President. In that, you can see me. I'm next to the president.
Yeah.
I'm a human being. He's there. We're looking at the same thing.
That's right.
In the room together.
Yeah.
She also, I felt like had a fairly good zinger for questions about her being old.
Yes.
And we, and in this point, we often sort of harass candidates about their ages, and Brent and I do that all the time, but we're not really in a position to do that at the moment because our choice is Bernie Sanders and he's 1 million years old.
Right.
So we're not really in a position to be making those comments anymore like we did in the McCain era, for example. But she did say, well, I may not be the youngest candidate in the race, but I will be the youngest woman president in the history of the United States.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
She also had her delivery was not, she's not a comedian.
Not a comedian.
Her,
not
what, what are those the media thing or the
I don't know,
you know, where the president comes out and like is basically a comedian?
Oh, the White House Correspondents Dinner.
Those aren't going to be great under a President Clinton, Hillary Clinton. But you know, whatever.
I know, we'll have to live with that. She's not a comedian. I recall them being like pretty great under Bill.
Yeah,
he's the personality in the family.
Yeah, I was going to say he's the charmer.
Yeah,
yeah. But she had another line actually also in this where she was like, I've seen presidents come into the White House, and then, you know, as the job is hard, and then their hair starts to gray. She was like, my hair will never gray because I've been coloring it for years. And I was like, oh, all right.
All right. Somebody's been writing a couple funny zingers for her.
That's right.
Yeah, Thank God. Someone's doing something.
Someone had to
lighten her up a little bit.
Yeah.
She also got huge applause lines on, you know, LGBT issues and women's rights.
Really talked about another issue that she has now joined the rest of us on.
Right. Only years after the rest of us were there.
Right.
But this is something that I think she's going to have to really, like, play on these pretty hard because, you know, she's going to want to walk away from a lot of the economic issues. She's not going to want to talk about economic policy that much. She's going to want to walk away from a lot of her positions on economic issues, or she's going to want to just, like, not tell us exactly what she thinks about those things.
Right, exactly.
You know, she doesn't want to talk about foreign policy with us because then we'll have to be like, hey, why are you such a hawk?
No.
And then she'll have to be like, what, me? I don't know. But what she does want to talk about is the issues that she knows are Democratic winners right now.
Right.
That are social issues. And so ultimately have probably like the minimum effect on your, on the sort of like the nation as a whole's life.
And at least
highly divisive in the Republican Party and everyone is moving to the left on.
Right. And at least in terms of women's rights, she actually has a record.
Right, she does have a record there. It's sort of a milquetoast good record, you know. It's like a good record for her.
Right. Yes.
It's she's not like some sort of.
It was a focus of hers in the State Department.
It was a focus of hers in the State Department, especially internationally.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's, she has a good record on that, sort of adjusting for the fact that she's really done most of her work internationally on women's issues, and that's doesn't really place her well into the discussions that we have in the United States about, you know, she has talked about equal pay quite a bit, but we're going to be talking about a lot of women's issues this year, I think. It seems like that's really like a conversation that's going to be happening.
And the Republicans are going to lose on that. We're going to get to that in a little bit.
The Republicans are absolutely going to lose on it.
Two of their leading candidates are not.
I do feel like she's going to have a hard, she's going to have her positions on this, and, you know, she's going to seem like she's done good work on this. And she's going to have a hard time going up against an actual progressive on a lot of these issues, I think. Because so many of the issues that we now face as women have to do with economic policy.
Right.
They're not just direct issues like men are not letting us do things or whatever. Right. I mean, a lot of it has to do, the equal pay conversation partially starts with a discussion about why, like, big business is trying to exploit all of us to begin with.
Right.
And, like, the minimum wage conversation impacts women in a disproportionate way.
Right.
And like, these are all conversations that that's why she's going to have to move to the left on those issues, but also she's going to sound less credible.
Right. Well, and also and besides the fact, in terms of LGBT rights, besides the fact that it took her a while to get there, not only did it take her a while to get there, it took her much longer to get there than two of the people who are going to be her chief rivals here, because Bernie Sanders has been there forever. Martin O'Malley passed gay marriage when he was the governor of Maryland. I mean, both of them can speak to this much more sort of, you know, full-throatedly than she can.
Yeah.
Because they have a record on LGBT rights that she does not have, other than recently declaring that she was for them. And then all the gays stupidly falling in line because they're lackeys. Yeah, I said it.
Yeah, you said it. You're not afraid.
No, I'm not.
No, these are the kinds of, you know, I think there's going to be a certain amount of left-wing conversation that's going to be like, but wouldn't it be nice to have a female president? Because this is a conversation that keeps happening to me, and I keep being like,
Would it be nice to have Carly Fiorina as your president?
Well, like,
no,
it would be nice to have a woman as the president, of course. I, of course, think that that's an important thing, an important step for America.
Yes.
Do I want just any woman to be the president? She's still got to be the president.
Right.
Like, it's great to like be like, women can do anything.
Once we elect we're stuck with her.
Well, then we have a president who potentially is not the president that I want. And that's where the thing with Hillary Clinton and me falls apart.
Right.
Because I'm like, I would love if women's rights Hillary Clinton was president.
Right.
Good work to her. She's done it. She's a smart, articulate woman.
That's
she can be president.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that she has done a lot of the sort of like work that you need to do to be a person who can be president. I believe she could handle the job.
Yeah.
Do I want her handling of the job? Not particularly.
Nope.
That's where things are falling apart.
That's right.
Like, so this is going to be a weird conversation for the left, I think.
It is.
But I mean, these are big crowd pleaser lines. So obviously she's
totally. She's going to
realize that she's got to ride that.
Yeah.
Interestingly, in the speech, she did not mention the TPP. And then I think today she came out and was sort of like, we got to do what Pelosi wants to do.
Yeah. Which, you know, this actually,
this is
a thing that is similar to what she did with LGBT rights, where she waited until it was not an issue any longer. I mean, yes, we're going to have to deal with this again, and it may come up again.
But it seems Democrats are pretty united on where this
people had been wanting for her to speak out on this for weeks. All of the Republicans had, all of the Democrats had, and I think that this is a thing that is a problem for her because she is still at the point in this campaign where she is not wanting to have to tell anybody what she thinks about anything.
Yeah.
And that is problematic, especially the person who is the presumed nominee from one of the major political parties should have a response about what the major political discussion is of the day.
Yeah.
And she refused to answer any questions about it until today when we'd already decided.
Yeah. No, that's her way.
It's her way.
That's why people don't necessarily trust her turn of heart or change of heart
on her
move left. It's
because she waits for the winds to blow
until everyone has already decided, and then she's like, oh well, people like left-wing politics.
She
now
leads from behind, if you will.
Yes,
it's a classic term.
It's a classic term, and what it means is following from behind.
Correct. So now it's not really leading
it's not
at all.
Really leading at all.
No,
she's following from behind.
That's right. Yeah,
but this is I think going to become more and more apparent because the most high-profile contenders that she's facing at the moment are, like, leading from in front. Like, very hardcore.
Yes.
I mean, Bernie Sanders does not have a vote in his record that he is ashamed to talk about.
No.
Like, Martin O'Malley is a boring human being, but, like, probably pretty much stands behind his record for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, she is going to have... So these are people that are going to be, like, knowing what they think about things.
Right.
Because they don't vote wrong on things.
No.
You know, like...
They already know.
They already know what they think about issues.
So they don't have to wait to see.
Exactly. They're, like, literally telling you what they think, as opposed to what they're pretty sure you want to hear them say.
Right.
So, that's the danger here.
But what I will say about that speech that I enjoyed, and I think was an important thing for her, and unless I just wasn't paying attention, I don't remember from 2008, is that she really got into some sort of, like, biography portions of the speech, and those were things that I think were interesting, and I had, like I said, I had not heard before. She talked a lot about her mom, who was like a housemaid at 14 because her parents had, like, either, I can't remember, died or abandoned her or something like that. I mean, like, you know, I just don't, in 2008, I feel like she was running such a presumed sort of, like, above everything, sort of like, I am next in line. I just don't feel like I ever learned anything about her as a person. I'm sure these things are, like, in her books and shit like that or whatever.
Right,
but, like,
but they're not part of the sort of overall narrative.
There were a lot of moments where I was like, I didn't know that. And for a person who has been in the public spotlight since, I mean,
the
late 80s, early 90s, that, I think, is, there's something to be said there. So I think she has to get people to like her.
Well, and it's a good sign, I think, that they've identified that this is something they're going to have to talk about. Because I think that part of what was hard about her last campaign was the arrogance of sort of being like, well, you guys already know me.
Yes.
So I don't need to say anything anymore. Right. You know, Obama got dinged because he wasn't saying anything either for a long time.
Right.
And then finally he was like, wait a minute, who am I? Like, I gotta tell the people something.
Yeah.
And she was doing that, but in a sort of like, but you guys already know me.
Right.
So like, why would I need to utter words to you about right. things? Like,
yeah.
And I feel like that's never a smart way to run a campaign.
No.
If you want to be liked,
yeah.
which she does this time, hopefully.
Yes.
It seems like maybe.
Yeah. So the women's issues story that we sort of hinted at in the last time, where we said that the GOP wasn't really winning on this, and they haven't been winning for a long time.
Right. Here's another way in which they're not winning.
Right.
As we know, Jeb Bush has already been getting a lot of flack. P.S. Timeout. Let's talk about his new logo. It's like
Jeb, the Jeb. Disney Channel show coming Jeb, fall 2015. Yeah.
Jeb, exciting.
It's like, too ridiculous.
It's too ridiculous.
It's like Jeb in red font in sort of like, you know, that's it's
in
got
like a kind of hokey, like
hokey
Comic
font,
Sans looking
exclamation
font.
Point, and then it just says 2016 underneath
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Like we're all supposed to only call him Jeb so that we forget that he's a Bush.
Right, exactly.
It's sort of like that's his way of running without having to declare that he's a Bush.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hillary's sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah, she is.
She's trying to be just Hillary.
Right.
Her logo is just an H.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
They're all trying to pretend like they're not part of like dynasty political traditions.
Right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
In any case, Jeb Bush was in a little bit of hot water last week because he had advocated for like shaming single mothers or something like
yes.
that. Like there was that whole controversy
yes,
about
yes, yes, yes.
you know him in his book or something. He had written something
yeah.
about how we should be like shaming single mothers.
Yeah.
Turns out he believes that quite strongly because there was a 2011 bill in Florida.
Yeah.
That has caught up a lot.
A 2001.
A 2001
yes.
bill in Florida that has caught up a lot of now federal representatives.
Right, because a lot of the people who were in the Florida state legislature at the time are now in the United States legislature at the time.
Yeah.
A lot of, on both parties.
On both sides of it, yeah.
yeah.
But so in any case, this was a bill that was called the Scarlet Letter Law
yeah.
that would have required single mothers to publish their sexual histories in the newspaper in order to place their babies up for adoption.
Yikes.
Like, I have a lot of issues with this, as you might imagine. But one of them is I'm sort of like, what are people supposed to do then? Should
right?
we all
I
stop
know.
Having sex? All of us?
Yep.
Because is that what Jeb Bush wants?
Yes.
For no one to have any more sex?
Yes.
Because these are people that are against abortion. So you're not allowed
right.
to get an abortion.
Right.
They are then, and the go-to thing that they always say when they're like, you know, abortion is taking a life.
Yeah.
So just put the baby up for adoption.
Also
bring
against,
the life to fruition.
Right. Yeah.
But then they're going to publicly shame you if you try to put the baby up for adoption.
Right.
So like if you are stupid enough to have sex, you have to then raise a baby into
right.
adulthood,
that's
basically. That's
correct.
What that's your punishment for having sex.
That's right.
Like these are like where's the out? What are you supposed to do with all these babies?
Yeah, not you're supposed to not have sex.
You're supposed to not have sex anymore.
That's right.
These people don't want people to stop having sex. By the way, these people are definitely all visiting prostitutes. There's no way that they're against
sure.
having sex.
I would believe that Rick Santorum wants us all to stop having sex.
That's true.
And maybe Mike Huckabee.
And maybe Mike Huckabee, yeah.
I don't believe that's what Jeb Bush wants, though.
No, no. Jeb Bush, if he was the bully that we know him to be for most of his schooling, then we know Jeb Bush does not want to himself stop having sex.
Certainly not.
And I know that Marco Rubio, also, he's a young, strapping guy. He's not trying to make himself stop having
right.
to have sex.
No,
they only want exactly. women to stop having sex, mysteriously.
Bingo.
In any case, both Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush
right.
voted for this law.
Well, I think Jeb Bush sort of allowed it to go through. Right, yes.
Marco
exactly.
Rubio voted for it.
Yes, he did.
Also, five legislators who are now serving in the House voted
yep.
for it, including Lois Frankel, who basically admitted she hadn't read the bill.
Right. She didn't know that that
she
was
didn't
in
know
it.
She didn't know that
that
was in
she's
it.
She's a Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the only Democrat who voted for it, and she was like, I didn't read it. Didn't
yep.
know it was in there.
Yeah.
There
were some Republicans who did vote against it, though.
Yeah. No, that's...
And Debbie Wasserman Schultz voted against it.
Right. And there were I think, a total of, like, 9 Florida, you know, legislators
yeah, a lot
who are
in
now
House
in
right
the House.
Now. Yeah.
But so in any case, like, Jeb Bush is, like, sinking on women's rights right now in a way that is sort
yeah.
of spectacular.
Totally.
But it's also going to take Marco Rubio down, too. Because
right. And they're the two of the supposed front runners.
Slash legitimate people in this campaign. And I feel like this is worthy of being Todd Akin for.
I totally agree.
to publicly shame women who want to, who have done the thing that you want them to do and are going through with it.
And they're not even trying to get abortions. They're just wanting to put the babies up for adoption. They're just
putting babies up for adoption.
Yeah.
I mean, these are
people. This is what you would think that they would want you to do.
Exactly.
As opposed to having an abortion.
But you should also be shamed for that.
For that.
Because you should have known better than to have sex.
Right.
Because women shouldn't be allowed to do that.
That's right.
Only men should be allowed to have sex.
Yep.
In any case.
Yep.
That is problematic. Also, yep. Jeb Bush took like some weird international tour to Estonia this week.
Well, I think weird. That was added onto the end of the trip because
but
he
it was
had
all
been
places
in,
like Latvia and like, I know, it was all weird crazy. Eastern European countries.
Right. Well, and I think Estonia was added because of its relation to Russia.
Mm, yeah.
Because he sort of, one of the main goals was to highlight sort of like a more engaged U.S. and NATO, like, you know, to sort of like get Russia and Putin under control sort of you know, in the region. But yeah, it was like, it was sort of a gaffe-free trip, but it was also sort of like the world's most foreign trip.
It was only to places where it wouldn't matter if you gaffed.
Right. Exactly.
Estonia. Yeah, exactly. If you, I know. Well, as Brent has written here, if a gaffe falls in Estonia, can anyone hear it?
Nope, they can't.
No.
No, you don't.
But this is a good sign because previous presidential frontrunners have gone on ill-fated trips abroad.
Right.
And made dumb statements, insulted all of England.
Right, Mitt Romney couldn't even get England right, and that's like where you would go if you were like, trying to just sort
that's
of like...
like the poor man's America. Like,
yeah,
that's,
I was going to say, you can just go...
know what's right and wrong in England easily.
Yeah.
It's easy to not insult English people. They're just like Americans.
If your plan is to go to England before the Olympics, then the idea would to not tell them that they are ill-prepared to be hosting the Olympics. Like, that,
like, I think
that would be
your plan is to say, it seems like you're doing a great job preparing for
Olympics
the Olympics.
These Olympics are going to be
fantastic. These Olympics are going to be
great.
Can't
wait for the dressage event.
I'm so excited to see my beloved horse,
dance around
Rafalka,
all of England.
Dance. Dance through England.
That's right. That's
in
it.
The dressage competition.
Easy.
Like, that's...
we just did it.
We just did it. And neither of us are diplomats. But it seems like we were better prepared than Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see that Jeb Bush...
At least didn't do that.
Well, and you remember that George Bush had never been to anywhere except Mexico.
Oh, that's right.
When he was running for president.
Yes.
He had never left the country.
Yes.
Which was... but also mysteriously spoke Spanish. Did you ever hear his Spanish language ads? They were hilarious.
Oh, God, no, I didn't.
Yeah,
I bet they were.
I mean, they were not hilarious in that he said anything hilarious. They were just hilarious because George Bush was speaking Spanish in them.
Right.
But he had only ever been to Mexico. So at least Jeb Bush is like the worldly Bush.
Yes.
He's been to Estonia.
That's right.
I haven't been to Estonia.
Nope.
So
probably
that.
Won't.
Probably never will go. And
I
don't feel bad about it.
Uh-huh.
I'm okay.
Another place that you will never go is to the Iowa Straw Poll because it's gone.
Never going
to
go there
because
you can't.
Nope. Wow.
Michelle Bachmann really
was such a
nailed the final nail into that coffin.
She did, yeah. She was like one of the four horsemen of the Iowa Straw Poll. Or all four of them.
Or she was
she
the
rode
full,
all four of the horses.
Yeah, she was the full horseman.
Yeah.
The full horseman quadra something. Anyway.
Yeah. Because it's done. The GOP, the Republican Party voted like big time, unanimously, on Friday to kill it. And so now it's gone.
Yeah.
That's it.
So Ben Carson has nothing to look forward to at this point.
Nope.
There's nothing for him. There's nowhere for him to go.
I know. Well, and it's so weird because, like, you know, all of them, and we've talked about this before because there's been rumblings of whether this was going to go away.
Right.
Or whatever.
We've been talking
and
about
so
this.
So we've already gone over all the reasons why it's just bonkers anyway. But I mean, so many people were already not going to go. So the writing was on the wall for this anyway because, you know, Jeb Bush wasn't going to go. Marco Rubio wasn't going to go. Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee. And at least in terms, Rick
those
Santorum.
Those are the only people who could legitimately win in Iowa.
Right. Rick Santorum. Like, you would assume that Jeb Bush would not show up for this because, like, he doesn't have a prayer. Anyway, but like Rick Santorum and Mike Huckabee are the type of crazy that could win the Iowa straw poll.
They're the type
so like
of crazy
once they're not going,
they could win the straw poll and Iowa.
And Iowa, exactly.
They're the only
well, they both
kind,
did.
Right, exactly.
Right.
They're the only kind of crazy that can do both of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they weren't going to bother showing up for the straw poll, then like what,
why have it?
What's
don't
relevant
have it.
About the straw poll anymore?
Right, exactly.
Technical note, I don't understand how the straw poll actually worked.
Well, I'm not exactly
did it involve
sure, but
straws?
No, but it does involve it's basically just like a big party event. So you have to pay to get in. I think you have to either even pay to vote potentially, but you definitely have to pay to be there. All of the, you can basically, you know, I mean, you can't pay for votes, but I mean, you can basically sort of like give people things to go vote for you, or you can sort of like have your big tents or whatever that's like giving away things and stuff like that.
So like it's like voting if there were no laws.
Right, exactly. Like if you
buying
were.
Votes.
Right, exactly. So it's sort of, you can almost buy a win.
Right.
You can't really.
Right.
But
If you could fully buy a win, Jeb Bush might have shown up.
Right, exactly. He would if have you the can money only to buy, do so.
Right. Oh, Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum are the only kind of candidates that reach the sort of necessary threshold of funding
right.
and legitimacy.
Right. But it's been a big fundraiser for the Republican Party, for the state party. So right. It's
That's
interesting that they... I'm surprised they didn't just have it even if only the sham candidates showed up to it.
Now they have the Hogs and whatever event.
What was that?
Joni Ernst.
Something and Hogs.
Yeah. Already remember. Forgotten.
Yeah.
It doesn't stick in the mind like steak fry.
No, it sure doesn't. Or the Freedom Summit.
The Freedom Summit. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in New York, and this is like a news story that I've been kind of like following from afar.
It's so weird.
They're having this crazy prison outbreak situation.
Yeah, it's like a Shawshank Redemption situation going on. For weeks now, I feel.
Yeah, there's like a Shawshank Redemption situation going on in New York where two men pulled off like a crazy prison escape.
Yes.
And we've been following them all over the state and potentially Canada, right. I think, or something. Because right. they disguised themselves and like...
They put fake...
Metro North uniforms, right? Or something? Right.
Yeah, they make those because they worked in the part of the prison
right.
where they... So they basically, made, you know, pillow humans
right.
and left in their bed. And then sort of through what they think now is they're questioning a woman who worked at the prison who they think potentially helped them.
With the escape?
With the escape. Gave them, a buzzsaw and whatever because they were basically able to sort of, get through... the wall of their cell. They had adjoining cells, I think, or something like that. And they were able to get through and then, climb out and, go through some pipes. But they were able to, drill through things and stuff like that. So they had,
tools.
Equipment to be able to sort of, do all of these things. And so they think that there is this woman who they've been questioning, what's her name? Oh,
Joyce Mitchell,
who had befriended the men in prison, and they've since talked to her ex-husband, and because she sort of has a crazy past, and her ex-husband, who was also a former coworker, came forward and detailed her alleged infidelities in the past, and leading the New York Post to brand her as a sex-crazed homewrecker. By the way, so she sort of is a colorful character in this whole story. Anyway,
but the escape itself is
crazy.
It's literally they're in a catwalk, and
right,
then they're
six stories high that they climbed down
through
and then,
these corridors, and then they're drilling through a wall, and then they're in a steam pipe, and then they pause to leave the message "Have a nice day" and a racist caricature on a post-it note.
On a post-it on the there's pictures of this there's this post-it on the big pipe that they drill through to them
and then
climb in.
So they shimmy through the pipe, and then they cut a hole to escape it, and then they go through a manhole cover, and that this is made for film.
Yeah.
That's not
and
a
now
real thing
they're
that's
gone.
Happened. And they're gone, and we can't find them.
No. Supposedly, there were some reports afterward of people who now sort of, after the fact, think that they saw them. But at the time, you don't think anything of that, because it's just, at that point, you're just seeing a person walking around sort of outside the prison. But, you wouldn't necessarily, that person escaped
from
prison.
That person escaped from prison in a steam pipe. That's not what you think.
No. So, but they're gone.
They're gone. So, I think there might have... They were following them around New York State for a while, and then they had moved to other states or something, and then they were in Canada.
Canada, and I think they've also alerted Mexican authorities to be on the lookout, because I think that they...
If they made it to Canada, what's to say they don't make it to Mexico?
It'd be easier to make it to Mexico. I mean, it's further away, but easier to get in than I think it would be to Canada.
It's Somebody's pretty easy to get into Canada.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you ever done a land border with Canada?
I haven't done a land border.
That is... You might... you can just... walk into Canada, basically.
I thought they were being more strict about,
they claim that they are, and the rules are stricter for sure.
Yeah.
But if you are oh my God, I'm so sorry, I only have my driver's license, you can basically still get into Canada.
Right.
You can sort of do whatever to get into Canada that you need to do. So.
But that's crazy. I mean,
it's wild.
It's wild.
It's wild.
So anyway, we'll see if we find those.
Yeah.
Guys.
But even if we don't, we're now at the most important story of the week.
Oh, my God.
This is...
We don't have the words. It's the Rachel Dolezal story.
You've all heard
you
it.
You know it.
And we're going to tell it to
know
you again.
Know it and love it.
Right.
I was telling...
It's an American classic.
It's an American classic. This is a story that, as we said in the rundown, everyone totally got right here.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone. But
no,
I mean...
There's never,
it was
never everyone.
Never everyone. But, Friday's... internet
was just, an amazing place.
It got me through Friday.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have much to do.
No.
And it just, it was the gift that kept on giving. Everybody was, like, doing
the right thing. Every time a new item breaks on this story, by the way, it's, like, a new gift.
Right, and there were, like, so many great, hilarious, you know, like, things that were being done.
Black Twitter was in
Black Twitter was winning. Gawker was winning. There was, like, the hilarious quiz on Gawker where it was, like, are you know, take the quiz as to whether you're a black woman. And then it was, like, yes, no.
And then you clicked
one. And I don't know. And then you clicked one, and then that was the answer. Right. You know, like, I mean, it was just... So good. It remains good. I got an infographic. Somebody texted me yesterday that was a picture of her overly tanned, and it said, orange is the new black.
I saw that one, too.
That's a good... I mean, there were just... It was never ending. You could go into the deep, dark recesses of the internet.
No, and it was like every moment someone new had been interviewed who had a new hilarious perspective on this story.
Yeah.
Because... Okay. So, if you don't know the full story...
Yeah.
A 37-year... Quick rundown. This is happening in Spokane, which potentially doesn't have very many black people.
That's what... That was one of the first things I said. Yeah. I was like, do people just not know in Spokane, Washington?
They might not.
I don't trust that they...
I think it's one of the, like, whitest places
on Earth. Would have to be, right?
Yeah. It's very white.
I'm basing this on no knowledge, but...
I am basing it on one conversation I had with someone who grew up in Spokane once, years ago.
Perfect. All right.
It sounded real... She sort of described it as mostly white people.
Well, it's factual, then.
Yeah.
Moving on.
She's the president of the NAACP chapter there, or as I accidentally kept calling it on Friday, the WNAACP, right, which is the White National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Yeah.
She was a part-time professor of Africana Studies at Eastern Washington University, and her parents get... there's some sort of weird custody battle going on with her brother and slash now son,
right,
who she has decided to take custody of because she's alleging abuse. She's alleging her parents were abusive.
Because she's estranged from her parents, and she has three what are actually siblings, who are African-American that her parents adopted. So she's much older than they are. So she is now estranged from her parents. She claims that two of these children that are actually her siblings are her own children. Right. And she's also married to a black man. Well, she's not anymore, but she was married to a black man
as well. So she has, I think, one son who is definitively
Yes, the
son.
Youngest one the youngest is son technically is, she is the custody.
Right.
She has the custody mother. Of. Correct. Yes.
But so she has custody. So I think her parents and her are involved in a weird custody battle.
Right.
Because of that, her parents announced that the Rachel Dolezal that we all thought we knew was actually a white blonde teenager from Michigan.
Right. And we start seeing a lot of pictures of her, even from her wedding. So, like, her black
Angel
husband
quite recently
knows.
Yeah. She was.
What
but
she's
then
up
there's
to.
Also these weird elements of her story because she's telling a version of her. She's, like, obviously some sort of weird pathological liar because she's weaved a crazy tale of her past that is, like, absolutely untrue.
Right.
Not confirmed by any of her siblings. Not confirmed, obviously, by her parents. It involves, like, living in teepees and, like, hunting and gathering.
Oh, right.
And like, living in South Africa.
She was in South Africa, and she hunted with bows and arrows.
Yeah.
And, like,
her family did move to South Africa after she was already an adult and estranged from them. So she kind of, like, grabbed weird elements of her parents' story and her siblings' story.
Right.
And then kind of, like, also weaved together this, like, crazy tale.
Yeah.
But she's also... went to Howard University, which is a historically black college, on a full scholarship, having submitted art of all, I think, African-American women.
Right.
And so I think that there was sort of like some alleging that they thought she was black when they offered her a full scholarship and accepted her.
Right.
And obviously, you can't then be like, no, never mind. We wouldn't have given
this
to you if you're white.
Yeah.
But like, also, there was apparent, like, people from her college have stepped forward and sort of been like, she felt a little left out.
Right.
And she was alleging... weird kinds of like racism at the college because people were probably like, what are you doing here?
You're white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in any case, she has since the sort of mid 2000s started to kind of like adopt the identity of a black woman.
Right.
To the degree that she's like a well-known figure in the community. It sounds like she's police ombudsman board or whatever.
Right.
And she had to identify her race for their application form or whatever, and identified herself as white, Native American, and black. So it's like she has started to believe that she is a black woman as well.
Yeah.
But so she kind of like has now become this sort of like national sensation.
Yes, she definitely has.
She has a mysterious black man posing as her father in a photo somewhere.
Yes.
And this all kind of really came to a head when a local news station in Spokane asked her point blank, are you African American?
Yeah.
And she said, I don't understand the question, and then took off the mic and walked away.
Yeah. Well, and then she in a different interview, she was asked something similar, and she was like, well, I don't like the term African-American. And then she was like, I prefer the term black. And then he was like, well, do you consider yourself black? And she was like, yes, I do consider myself to be black.
Did not see that interview.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting. Weird. Interesting, weird. Weird and interesting. All of those things.
That's right.
Some important details to note. One, her hair is, like, really on point.
And she, on her resume, says that she knows, she's basically, like, a professional stylist hairstylist. Of black hair.
Yeah.
Right. And she has had all of the black hair.
All of it. None of it was her actual hair.
Currently, it's a sort of, like, perm-like situation.
She's referring to as the natural look, but as you might imagine, since she has straight blonde hair naturally, it wasn't her natural look.
She has had fake blonde dreads that like, were, hung like,
floor length.
That is my favorite picture of her, by the way, because there's a picture of her on the standing in a group of African Americans, and she is on the end of the group. And she's got, like, the bun of the dreads that are, like, hanging down. And there's, like, a black woman standing right next to her. And the look on this black woman's face, I was like,
who is this woman?
Right. She knew all along. Whoever that woman was in that picture.
Was a knower.
Was a knower. Yeah, that's my favorite picture.
Oh, yeah. That picture is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's also getting a lot of comparisons to the transgender conversation, as if you can decide that you're a different race.
Right.
Like, Republicans specifically are drawing a lot of comparisons to that. So it's, like, led to this whole other kind of weird it's led to a lot of discussions about race in America, because I think a lot of people feel like this is almost, like, the most, like, an extreme example of privilege. Like, being privileged enough to take on the identity of someone who's not privileged.
Well, that's what I sort of, like, you know, my initial reaction was sort of, what a lot of people have been saying, and even I think the NAACP has come out and
said this sort of like she was a good advocate, like, whatever.
She was a good advocate, but it's so arrogant
to
do something like this. And also, you can't pretend to be African-American as a white person and then not have had gone through any of the struggles to actually be an African-American person. You can't decide in your 30s that you're African-American and haven't actually had to, like, live through what that means.
Also, I think that that is why it's so troubling that she made up this fake past for herself. If she was sort of, like, just a person who, like, mysteriously had no past and was posing as an African-American person, that is a kind of arrogance and also a kind of privilege. I mean, that's the privilege. That's a kind of white privilege in and of itself, to be able to sort of, like, absorb the identity of in a way that's somehow personally advantageous to you, but absorbs the identity of someone who's not advantaged.
Right.
But also, in order to pull off this ruse, she, like, became, like, made up this, like, crazy backstory for herself.
Right.
Because that's, I think, you know, when you talk, like, people who are African-American but have very light skin and maybe, like, could pass if this was the kind of era where that was a thing people were doing still and, like, whatever, still have sort of, like, a family history of some sort of oppression that they come out of.
Correct.
So that is what they have that she doesn't have as a person who just started to tan herself and put dreads in her hair.
Right.
Like, that's what it means. That's what it means to be black, even if you are not someone who maybe outwardly looks obviously black.
Right.
But so she, like, in making up this, like, whole long, like, backstory was sort of, like, exercising. She was, like, almost engaging in, like, a weird kind of performance art.
Yeah,
that
she was,
like, weird white person privileged performance art.
Well, right. Well, and that's what
she
I said.
Privileged,
I mean,
enough to decide she was black.
You know, my one of my dear friends who I share an office with, who is biracial, and I were obviously having a field day with this on Friday, and she used the term minstreling around Spokane.
Yeah.
And I hadn't gone there in my brain, I guess, at that point. And I was like, that's really what she's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't in blackface, but she was in blackface.
Well, I feel like the idea, because, you know, we also talked a little bit about the fact that, like, in this day and age, like, people don't really ask that much. Like, it's not polite to be like, hey, are you black?
To someone
who you can't tell. And so, like, probably a lot of what she got away with, she just got away with because of assumption.
Well, and that's the thing. That's the other thing, too. This same person who I was talking about is actually, who's biracial, my friend, is very light-skinned.
Right.
And she was like, if someone who looked like her told me that she was biracial, I wouldn't you know, you, I wouldn't you don't like, ask for papers.
Right, like,
you
know what I mean? Like, the proof.
Right,
like,
I want, you know, to go get a DNA test. Like, that's right. not what you do. I mean, we no. don't live in that world, which is lovely, I guess. But, I mean, you know, that, so is, that I think, because so many people were like, why did, how did she get away with this?
Like, in, you know, there was sort of like the sense that, like, if no one was asking, then no one was asking. And I sort of feel like she was telling.
Yes, you're right. That's true.
She was outwardly telling.
Yes, you're right.
That's where I think this maybe takes a different, like, takes on a different tenor.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Like, this is, there's a difference between nobody asking because you sort of look like you could, ethnically ambiguous and could be anything.
Right, and they just don't want to ask and they because just, like, they're trying to be nice.
Right, but, well, right. and, like, also, who, like, what business is it of theirs? Who cares? Right. Like, whatever. This, she was, like...
Well, she's running the NAACP.
She's a woman who was telling people, like, first of all, was running the NAACP and also, like, teaching Africana studies and, like, right. telling people she was a black woman.
Right.
But then was also, like, somehow having to know that in her mind she was also, like, tanning and, like, treating her hair. Like, she was having to make all this effort
right.
to look like this character that she was playing. And, yeah. like, somewhere in her mind, like, what was she thinking during her repeated tanning well, sessions see, that got her skin to that unnatural color?
Well, see, that's the thing. I think on some level, anybody can sort of tell themselves a lie over a period of time and then end up believing it. But... She was having to remind herself of the lie, like, on a potentially weekly basis.
Yes, if not daily, because if your hair is naturally straight and blonde, it doesn't just, like, stay curly that way that easily.
Right.
I mean, keeping that kind of curl in your hair is a lot of work. I
can imagine.
Not nearly as much curl, but yeah. know for a fact that it takes upkeep.
Right.
Like, that... She was having to do things that were, like, things... that you don't have to do if you actually look the way that you look.
Right.
And that was sort of, like, part of what makes it so hard to, like, understand what was going on.
Yeah.
Is, like, she wasn't just, like, a person who decided to style her hair differently.
Right.
She was, like, claiming a new identity and styling her hair differently.
Right, exactly.
And yeah. that identity was something where she had to, like, while styling her hair, think to herself, I am doing this
right.
because this is not my natural hair.
Right.
Like, it's crazy.
It's totally crazy.
It's a crazy...
But we're going to hear from her tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
They're having their monthly meeting or something excited. Like that. Because the NAACP, their chapter is going to release a statement, I think, as well at the same yeah. time. So tomorrow is sort of like
when we find out everything.
Yeah.
But the NAACP actually has sort of been pretty kind of like, they were like, we're going to give her privacy. She's been a good advocate and white people have always been a part of this, you know, group. So like,
right.
you know, that's as, you know, that's, we wish everyone luck. Like basically well, they were sort of like.
Well, and even her parents, who, you know, obviously she's estranged from for whatever reason, even said, and I think this is another thing that a lot of people have been saying, but that she couldn't have run the NAACP chapter, but she could have been the same advocate.
Yeah.
She could, you know, I mean, you don't have to be a black person to advocate for civil rights.
Right. Yeah, no, don't. That's right. That's yeah, there's something sort of, like, weirdly cynical about trying to sort of, like,
yes.
you know, take on
yeah.
a persona that you feel, like, derives you greater credibility than your actual persona when you
right.
don't really have the thing to back it up.
Right.
You know? That's right. That kind of doesn't...
Sarah Palin wasn't one to let this pass her by the way.
Did you know that political correctness is destroying America?
Oh, I didn't.
Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Sarah Palin is here to tell us.
Oh, well, it's a person who would know because she's not politically correct
exactly.
at all.
Yeah, that's. I feel like there are a lot of questionable elements to her statement. I love that she notes that our original civil rights freedom fighters are rolling in their graves over the backward steps we've taken lately. Like, what backward steps is she referring to?
I don't know.
And which of those steps were steps that were not backward because of people who believe the things she believes?
She believes, yeah, exactly.
Like, which of the backward steps she's talking about are backward steps that civil rights leaders would roll over in their
right.
graves about?
Yeah.
But she basically sort of, like, dismisses the whole thing as hilarious and thinks it's hilarious that the left is sort of, like, struggling with what this means. And then kind of uses it to talk about how, you know, basically, like, unfair it is that Republicans are always getting branded for being racist after, you know, the... you know, calling out Elizabeth Warren over that weird thing where
yeah.
she claimed she was American Indian or
right.
Obama.
Which was a thing she had always been told growing up in Oklahoma
right.
from birth. So,
right.
Whatever. Regardless.
Right. Like,
not the same thing.
Whatever.
Regardless.
Like, she basically names a bunch of, like, stories that the GOP, like, made up
yeah.
and, like, otherwise kind of, like, threw out of whack. And then
yeah.
we're like, see, the left is just as bad.
Yeah.
Because Why shouldn't you? And she also called Dolezal an unsatisfied lily white leftist.
Oh, boy.
Just hilarious. But then also, oddly, in the middle of the statement, starts going on about graduating from the University of Idaho debt-free and roots, and then ends it with, go Vandals. What? Like, it takes, like, so many weird turns. It's such a weird statement.
Well,
so, but at least Sarah Palin got into the fray.
She's weighed in.
She's weighed in. That's what we're always hoping will happen.
That's right.
So in any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
What a week it was. Oh, we'll be back next week with what we can only hope is this great, slate of news stories.
That's right. Well, we're going to have an update on the TPP because that's going to...
we're going to have a vote again this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
So, happy Pride.
Yes.
If you're in LA. If you're not in LA, if you're in New York, happy
Pride season.
Puerto Rican Day Parade because that happened today.
Okay, great.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.